currently on the table in the country. So on Wednesday at 9 o'clock, the portfolio committee will meet in E249, and maybe just to indicate to members the focus areas. We will get a briefing from the National Commissioner on the current hotspots in the country and interventions from subsides. They happen in Limpopo, the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, KZN. So we will get that feedback from the National Commissioner. Also, with regard to feedback on the implementation of the Parliament recommendations, also indication from him on that developments, and also in also two other issues with regard to the South African Police Services. So we're looking forward to that interaction. So that will be the program for this term. Maybe today's developments, I'll first give an opportunity maybe for SAPS to introduce their delegation, and then the Fire Arms Appeal Board, and then the Hunters, and then of course the members. General Masemola, you're welcome.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, good morning, and the Appeals Board, the Hunters Association, good morning everybody. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, let me apologize on behalf of the Acting National Commissioner. He's on other businesses. We have seen quite a lot of areas of concern in the country. We had to run around, so I just have made it to be here. And introducing the delegation with myself, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is the Divisional Commissioner of Visible Policing, Lieutenant General Masie, just next to me. And after her is the component head of Central Fire Registrar, Major General Mamuteti. And lastly, is the head of CFR, Central Crime Registrar, Brigadier Mambule. As you are aware, as you said, Chairperson, we are to give update and feedback on what we have done with regard to some of the challenges that were in the CFR. I'm going to give Major General Mamuteti to take us through the presentation with your blessing, Chairperson. Thank you.
First, going to do the introduction, then we'll come back to you. Thank you. I will now ask the Firearms Appeal Board just to introduce their delegation.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. From the Firearms Appeal Board, I am Mr. Patrick Mongwe, the Chairperson of the Firearms Appeal Board. And I've got three members of the board immediately here when I left. It's Mr. Tulu, and accompanied on my far right, right there, the left, the lady and the gentleman is Mr. Majokweni, as well as Ms. Mashele. Thank you very much.
The Hunters Association.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. My name is Fred Kampfer, and I'm the CEO of the South African Hunters Association.
Thank you. I will now give an opportunity to Honourable Members to introduce themselves. We will start with Mr. Sheikh on that side.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My name is A.M. Sheikh Imam, and a member of the Scottish. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Cindy Lemola, a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm Jerome Marke, a member of this committee.
Goedemorgen, dames en heren. My name is Angie Moderati. I'm the president of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Apologies for being a bit late. This building is still a maze to me. Sambani Gamuza Kelembele, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. Maybe members, before we go to the delegations, members will remember even in the previous term there was a lot of discussion and consultations about the firearms environment was tasked in by the minister, the previous minister. There was a report. We all know about the developments regarding working towards new legislation or amendment of the current act. And just to give members a snapshot of where we are, what are the issues, I'm going to ask the content advisor, Ivan Keynes, just give us that before we go to SAT. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Chief, before I start, I just want to say that this is, as you say, it's coming a very, very long time, and there have been many meetings at the committee there, but for our purposes, the fifth parliament, I think I'm going to just take it from there and look at the more recent issues that the committee has met. So I've just identified some of the challenges. One of the big issues, Chair, is the instructions, the SAPS instructions on late applications. When we met with the firearm lobby, it's come out in the firearm summit as well. There was an instruction issue on the 2nd of February 2016, and then another one on the 11th of February, I think, which has been the source of the court challenge. There's no clarity, there's not sufficient clarity on the application for a firearm license ended in prior to the 90-day period, before the license expires, as well as within the 90-day period before that license expires. That will be accepted and processed by the SAPS and or the DFO and CFR, that produce a firearm officer for those that don't know the DFO. And that's subject to certain conditions being met for the latter. That's what the circular says. The concern that was raised by the firearms lobby chair is in the instance of applications for renewals of licenses, where that the license has already expired, the firearm must be surrendered, and the person who surrendered such a firearm will not be prosecuted. That's what the memo says. Now, the questions from the industry that's been raised with us in the past, this isn't clear because it doesn't say, can such a person continue to apply for a license, or will their firearm be destroyed? And that is a big question that must be cleared up. There's also the big issue of backlogs. If there isn't clarity on the processing of firearms, in November 2015, the figure that was submitted to the committee through correspondence was that it was already 123,000 licenses that have lapsed. And then the other issue is the question of application for competency certificates and licenses in the circular. That will be no longer be accepted. That was part of the circular. So the process which SAPS have laid out that the competency must first be approved and then the SAPS 271 or the license application can then be accepted. I thought it would just be interesting to show that we've had several meetings as a committee. If you can see the next slide. Since 2014, we've had one on the 20th of August. We've had the oversight visit on the 25th and the 24th of September 2014 to the CFR, and the committee found a lot of problems at the CFR, the storage space, the applications processes. We met with DFOs from all the provinces, Chair, or commanders from all the provinces, and there were many problems that the committee identified. And the committee recommended that there should be a turnaround strategy for the CR, and we deemed it as being urgent. We also met with the Firearms Appeal Board, who felt at that stage that they weren't being consulted on some of the issues as far as license applications were concerned, because they were dealing with most of the appeals as a result of licenses that were being refused. Chair, we also met on 24th and 25th March, 5th of March this year on the National Firearms Summit. Some of the recommendations were to make available the CFR data and that the Firearms Control Act be implemented to in terms of the letter of the law, and that we ought to look at completion and the processing of the Firearms Control Amendment Bill. I'm just doing some highlights here. On the 3rd of June, there was a plan of action presented on the turnaround strategy by the SAPS, and the committee recommended that it provide monthly reports on the turnaround strategy, which SAPS is currently doing. On the 8th of March, there was an urgent call by the firearms industry to meet with the committee. That meeting didn't happen. We decided to have an informal meeting with the chairperson with some of the firearms representatives. And there is the same problems, And one of the big issues that was also raised was that the steps consultation forum or the stakeholder forum wasn't working. Because SEP had not at that stage for, I think, 8 months met with the firearms industry. And then on the 9th of April, the committee was informed that the new illegal firearms unit would be housed in the DPI when we did the budget the hearings. She has some other key concerns. One is the effective implementation of the Act. Clearly, the processing of the Firearms Control Amendment Act hasn't been received by this committee, and it's something that the Secretariat has indicated that they will be bringing to the committee. Some of the other concerns is the refusal of large numbers of applications without valid reasons. In our oversight visit, if members can remember to the CFR, the Appeals Board, when we met with them, indicated that a lot of the refusals are brought before the Firearms Appeal Board without any valid reasons. And that tied the hands of the Appeal Board. Other issues was the building and storage for the CFR and the efficacy of the provincial flash units and the processing of firearm applications at provincial level. There was a lot of work around that. One of the complaints that the committee received in the visit to Free State, when we visited the provincial flash unit, was that the staff of the flash units are being used for other work at the stations, and that causes delays in the application being brought to national. Steps, according to the firearms appeal board, in our law meeting that we did have with them, they're not integrating some of the recommendations in the process of such applications. I did indicate that SEP's application or the refusal end up as appeal to the firearms appeal board. Another key concern is the digital integration of the three data systems that are currently being used at the firearms at the CFR. And there is no digital application available to people or members of the public. So the SEP's IT is not moving quickly or sufficiently quickly enough in terms of the integration of its own systems. And we also informed as a committee that the computers, all the flashes received computers, but that the computers, for instance, in the Free State weren't linked up with the mainframe, if members can remember, the SEP's mainframe. One of the recommendations was that it says a 90-day period must be reviewed because the competency certificate and application process lies there for 6 weeks at the station and then it takes a further 2 weeks to get to the CFR. So that's one of the issues that's raised in the Free State oversight visit. And then the other key issue is the backlogs. The backlogs are obviously going to be growing, Chair, and there has to be a plan for the management of those backlogs. See, those are some of the key issues, not all the issues, but some of the key issues. Thank you
very much. Members, any questions to the content advisor, the researcher, this input? Right. Thank you very much. Some members are on, I think, now on board in terms of issues. Right. Without further ado, I'm going to ask the gentleman Moore and his team to go into their presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson and honorable members. I'll allow General Mamutete to take us through the presentation. The presentation is more about the turnaround strategy after we have been at the portfolio committee. So that is the update on the turnaround strategy. On the issues of the directives that were issued earlier this year, I think the CFR will also, I'm sure, expatiate more around it. But what I'm aware of is that there is a case currently at the High Court about the same issue between us and the other parties. So I'm sure they will expatiate more on that. Senator Mamutete, thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable members, good morning. I'm going to be taking you through the presentation on the turnaround strategy that was presented and approved by the portfolio committee last year, last financial year. The content of my presentation will include the background, the performance overview for 2015-2016, which is the whole financial year, the corporate governance, which is part of the focus area for our turnaround strategy, The human resource capacity also is a part of the focus area. The movable and immovable resource facility, the information technology, communication that is taking place, as well as the service delivery improvement initiatives that we have come up in order to improve on some of the issues that we have identified. Just to give a background, if we know very well that the turnaround strategy can come from the visits that were conducted by the Deputy Minister of Police as well as by the Protocol Committee, in which we requested them to develop a turnaround strategy that will actually be able to assist us in moving forward to address the challenges within the CSR. So in the turnaround strategy, as I've indicated, is focusing on the six pillars. And as it has been presented, we are on monthly basis reporting to the Portfolio Committee on the progress that has been made in relation to the action plan that we have developed. So if I can just take you through the performance overview in terms of the financial year, taking it from the 1st of April 2015 to the 31st of March 2016, which is the previous financial year. As there is a graph on the all the categories of the applications. The first part is on the categories of the competencies, and then the second one is on the individual and business licenses. The third part is on the renewal individual both individual and business licenses, and the last one is on the permit and authorization. If I may just indicate on the issues of competency, you will see on the first graph that the competencies, the receipts are very high. We link it indication of a red graph. We have brought forward 41,886 just for competency, and we received 166,076, and we finalized 138,146, and we brought forward 69,816. So if we're looking on the graph, both the competencies as well as the individual licenses and the renewals, they are taking 90% of the applications. So our most bulk or our most applications that we are receiving is actually mostly on the competencies. And competencies are actually the precursors in terms of the other processes, because before the person can be able to possess a license, must have a competency certificate. So as you find, most of the applications in the competency environment are increasing. And over and above that, we also have the security officials who also apply for competency for purpose of employment. So this actually prompted us to actually establish a task team that is actually dealing specifically with the competency after we have realized that the backlog is increasing on a daily basis. So in a nutshell, if I can just summarize, the previous financial year we had a brought forward of 90,325, and we received new applications of 403,524, and we finalized 318,670, and the outstanding that we came forward for this financial year is 175,179. So moving forward in terms of the competencies, alone, we had a gross forward of 41,886 last year. And as I've indicated that we are receiving a lot of applications on the competency side, we received 166,076, and we finalized 138,146, and we have an outstanding of 169,816. But if we can check on the graph, we have realized that the graph is growing in terms of the receival, and as well as the, especially on the last quarter, the last quarter where we had most of the growth was on the competency side. This was actually prompted by the same directive that it was mentioned that we issued. We saw many of the people now starting to apply, and we received a lot of applications for competency. So from the third quarter and then fourth quarter is where we received a lot of applications for the competencies. And however, we can indicate that we had a lot of broad forward system in relation to the competency, and it's 69,860 for this financial year. On the individual and business licenses, you can see if you compare it with that one of the competencies, the number is not reasonable enough, but at least it's lower than that figure. But with the broad forward, we had a broad forward of 30,050 brought forward, and we received 87,977, which are new applications, and we're able to finalize 89,773, and we have an outstanding of 28,219 when we went to the new financial year. Most of the applications, the other challenge that we're having or the other issue that I need to highlight is that most of the applications, they will have to wait for the competency certificate or competency application to be finalized before this application can be processed. But not in all the cases, but most of the cases are like waiting for the competency certificate to be finalized. Hence, we have to prioritize the finalization of competency certificates. So in the next slide, it's talking about the renewal for both individuals as well as the business. If you can see in the first quarter, we had a broadcast from the previous year of 12,957, and we received 18,909 with a new application. But if you go to the second quarter, we had a broadcast from the previous quarter of 20,980, and received again 18,566. And then if you go to the third quarter, then the numbers start to increase on the receiver of the renewals. Basically, compared by that directive, you can see from the second quarter to the third quarter, we received 34,778 new applications for the renewal. And the number increased again in the next quarter, which is the fourth quarter, where we received the new applications of 56,166,000. And because of the high volume of the applications that we're seeing, we carried over 75,630. And this process happens, maybe I need to indicate that the process starts at the police station and it ends at the police station. We only at the CFR, we approve a renewal on the business renewals. But on the individuals are in process at the provincial level and are being approved at provincial level. The only thing that is doing from our side is to process and approve the competency. And once that one is done, then we take it back to the station, to the province, so that they can process the renewals. So we will see when we move on in terms of indication on where the application are sitting in terms of the renewals. Now going to the authorization, and I mean the payment and authorization is an environment where I indicated that we at the beginning of the third quarter we had a task team and it worked nicely for us, because the third quarter we realized there was an increase. You can see with the number of payments, 9,467 that we have received, and we finalized 10,067. And we brought forward 4,871. So this is the first quarter that actually told us that there's a problem, and we established a task team, and hence we see that improvement. So you can see with the payments and authorization, we really don't have such a problem as compared to the other categories. Now moving to the total number of applications for 2016, April to March 2016. These are the applications that were approved in terms of the finalization. The competencies that were finalized were 131,852. There were 3,503 that were refused, and there were 2,791 that were cancelled. And in total, these 138,146 of competencies that were finalized. Now with the individual, we approved 75,788. We refused 11,456. We cancelled 2,529. And in total, those that were finalized for the individual license business and the individual and business is 89,773. On the renewals, we had 62,544 that were approved, and 2,343 were refused or disapproved, and 872 were cancelled, and 65,759 were finalized. On the issue of payments, we had approved 18,279, and there were 630 that were refused, and there were 6,083 that were cancelled, and there were 24,000 in total, 992 that were finalized. Going now on the issues on the pending applications, as indicated, the process started at the police station and ends at the police station. Just to give an indication of the applications, where are they sitting as on the 6th of May this year. On the competency CFR, we had 35,047 applications that were with us that still has to be a process. But on the system, the 34,323 are those applications that has already been kept on the system but are sitting at the provincial level. On the individual and business licenses at the CFR, we're having 13,192 on the 6th of May 2016. Another province is sitting with 10,280,000. On the renewal, individual, both individual and business, at the provincial and at the national level, we CFR, we're having 2,752, and 76,778 is actually sitting at the provincial level, as I've indicated that the process ends there. The permits we're having 689, and at the provincial level, there's 931. Sorry about that. But we are already working on this process, because we are sensitizing the provinces as well as the station on the issue of processing these applications. And we are already embarking on the roadshows. We have already visited four provinces. The last one was Free State, of which we visited twice. The other day was actually just this week, where we had workshops with them to actually give them tools to be able to monitor the applications for firearms, to take the number of days that have been sitting there and to be able to dispatch them when it's necessary after the finalization. Going now to the performance indicator or a focus area which ensure the enhanced service delivery through improved performance. We monitor performance at the station on the circulation of firearms. That was the other key agent that we had there. Here we were trying to address the issue of the circulation of firearms, that most of the firearms are being recovered at the station but are not actually circulated on the system. So we visited 313 police stations during the previous financial year, and from those stations we were able to actually circulate 5,363. The stolen and lost firearms on the system. That was the team that was initiated from the CFR to be able to address the challenges of circulation of firearms. Moving to the issue of addressing service delivery, through the engagement that we had with the stakeholders, we realized that we are having a problem in relation to addressing the issues or the queries that the stakeholders are having. So we established an inquiry desk that was established on the 1st of July. So trying to actually centralize all the inquiries, because previously the inquiries were done in various regions. So we have centralized that function where we have three people that are dealing with inquiries. If maybe the person is having an inquiry that the card has not been printed, if maybe they're having an inquiry that the firearm license has been outstanding for a long time, they direct their queries to that office, and that office is able to address those challenges as quickly as possible, and we are making progress in that direction. So a total of 4,578 queries have been handled within 90 days period, and a total of 254 queries applications were handled after 90 days period. A total number of 15 inquiries and 9 queries were outstanding at the end of that financial year, but the situation has changed since then. Now moving to issues of corporate governance, which now intends to enhance good governance through compliance to the policies and to improve improve conduct. In order to improve issues around the security as well as the corruption within the environment, we have drafted a security plan and an anti-corruption plan, and that has been circulated for input. And those plans will both be finalized during this financial year. So this will assist us in terms of the security, especially when we're dealing with talking with the applications, because it's more paper in that environment. We're dealing with more paper than any other thing. There's a lot of files that we're dealing with. So we are trying to beef up the security issues in that environment. And we also have developed, we're busy in the process of developing the vetting, the policy to enable the vetting of members within the CFR, which is currently underway and is being scheduled to be completed during this financial year. That is the vetting of, the vetting we started with the commander, and now we want to include everybody, and it will also be cascaded to the DFO level, at the provincial level, as well as the station level, because corruption is not only at the CFR, it's also starting at the station level. So we want to work on the vetting of those members who will be working within that environment. We have also developed the standard operating procedure, which were finalized also and circulated for input during the February 2016. We'll be finalizing some of them this financial year and be able to come up with one national instruction that will be talking to the issues around the firearms within CFR. During the financial year, we registered a project from July to December 2015 to address the backlog of files. You remember there were challenges around the files that were laying around in the passages, in the crates. We have been able to move all those crates from the passages. We have actually been able to procure, but that will also be coming up, procure 20 containers for that purpose. We're able to move most of the files, but we also have additional 20 that have been procured, but those 20 still have to be shelved because the other one is full. So once it's shelved, the other files will also be moved to that environment. But also on the other side, we created space in the ground floor where we moved some of the files actually from the building to ground floor, because with the recommendation of the engineers, the files were too heavy for the building, hence there was a problem in relation to the building. On the issues of human resource capacity, there was also a focus area, which is aimed to enhance effective performance through capacity building and enforcing discipline. Here we're saying where the posts are vacant, we must make sure by all means that they are agency or as soon as possible filled. We were able to fill 5 posts in the previous financial year, and 7 posts have been advertised and currently in the process of finalization. We received also 27 interns for the enlistment in 20, were enlisted in September 2015. So for now, I can just indicate that 2 of those interns have subsequently resigned, so we are left with only 25 that are still available to assist the CFR, but their contract will be expiring maybe in September, for the 12 months. And then with a request of the deputy minister, we also made a request for additional 608 additional interns for identified stations where there's a serious increase or influx of applications that are received. So the process is under consideration, and once it's finalized, those people will be placed at a station where they receive a lot of applications for firearms. We also trained or workshopped 655 DFOs on the Firearms Control Act, as well as the enhanced firearm registry system, which is the system that we migrated from the firearm registry during July. So we wanted to actually aromatize them with the system, and also to take them through back again on issues of firearm control so that they can also have an understanding on what is expected of them. And we also sensitize them on the issues of anti-corruption. There were 3 departmental cases that have been finalized with the previous financial year. And 2 of those members that were involved have since resigned, and 1 of them was dismissed, and currently there are 2 cases that are still pending, and those members are still on suspension. Going now to the movable and immovable resource facility that is put into the building, they create a habitable environment and effective working environment tools. Then I'm talking now about the 40 containers that I spoke about, that we have procured 20 containers for the purpose of filing. If you look on your left side, you'll see the files that were sitting there. The situation has changed. We have been able to improve on the environment. 21 containers still need to be shelled for 2016-17. The 19 that we have received last year have been shelved, and all of them, they are full number 5. But we still have a self-challenge in relation to 5. Remember what is the penny? 5, so remember what is the penny? It's more paper trail there. We are having about 8 million plus 5 that we're having in our archives and that are sitting at CFR. On the end of the building, a new complex of building has been secured for the use of SAPS health office. And there's a possibility that the central fire and register will also be accommodated in that building. So that's the other progress that we can make, we can report on in terms of the building. Because we also had people coming from public works, as was indicated, the engineers came. And they advised us on the files, and you see we have moved all the files from all the offices and from the passages, but then we still have a problem of space and as well also on the issue of the parking, but that will be taken care of in terms of the current development in terms of the buildings, the new complex for health office. We also procured 14 state vehicles for CFR, and not only for CFR, it also assists the compliance section. We also have compliance section that is actually responsible to ensure compliance at all stations or at all provinces that will also be visiting the dealers and everybody in relation to the firearms control. The information technology that supports the business with required technology infrastructure based on service level agreement, we were able, because with the previous intervention of the Deputy Minister, there was a serious challenge on the issues of the computer. We were able to receive 261 printers and 7 laptops that were received and installed within the CFR environment. We also worked on the system configuration on the EFRS, and this is continuously done in terms of in order to address the identified challenges. The configuration, we actually talking about the situation we will be able to pay, but what is it that we want the system to give us? And what is it that we want the system to block? So those are the things that we normally do. And in terms of the configuration, Brigadier Maguro will also be able to highlight on most of the things that are done, because we actually were able to take some of the functions that we realized that they are prone to corruption. So we centralize some of the functions in order to address those challenges. But this is continuously done in order to be able to address the challenges. And we also have implemented the SMS notification on the EFR system that will communicate directly with the applicant to give progress in relation to the license, whether the license has been finalized or where the license, and on the other one, on the expired one, is where we say your license has been expiring within so many days, 20 days, then you are advised to report or apply, put an application at the nearest police station. That is one of the initiatives that we have put in place. Communication and stakeholder engagement. We have developed a communication strategy in consultation with communication environment, and it has been implemented from the 1st of February 2016, and we are focusing on social media, internal magazines, community call and website and printing, which we are continually updating in order to keep our clients to be informed of what is the process that is unfolding. And we also have printed lots of advertising material that we are using when we're doing our outreach programs, and when we're doing we are visiting our provincial shops, and when we are dealing with when we are doing our exhibition in consultation or working together with the stakeholders. We have 9 outreach programs in different provinces in relation to the Firearms Control Act, and we also have stakeholder engagement forum that was established, and the 6 meetings were held. The 2 task teams that are formed to address the shortcomings and the long-term issues. And in that task team, there were issues that were talking to the short term that we say we can be able to address there and there. And there was one that was actually talking to the framework on how are we going to be engaged. but based on the other issues that we're having, we couldn't continue with the stakeholder engagement, and now with the appointment of the divisional commissioner, the stakeholder engagement will be continuing. The stakeholder engagement plan was also drafted and circulated for input, and in this plan, we are now looking forward from the communication environment to be able to drive the process forward. We had 26 bilateral meetings with the various stakeholders, and we also had the four National Convention Arms Control Committee, and then Defense Conventional Arms Committee meeting. The Defense Conventional Arms Committee meeting, this is the committee that are considering the export firearm. It was on the threshold. The threshold, this is more than 10 firearms will go to the Defense Conventional Arms Committee, which is chaired by the minister within the president's office, Minister Hadere. So in those committees, we were able to finalize 188 export applications. And we also took an initiative to establish a data integrity office, which is staffed with 19 members. The aim is actually to streamline all the functions and to ensure one standard of dealing with firearms data integrity on data, including expediting transfer of dealer firearms and control of A-stage firearms. We have realized we're having a challenge where some of the officers will be saying the firearms that the person is applying for is not appearing on the database of the dealer. But on the other side, the dealer will say, no, I have since submitted my SA-50, but it was not captured. So this data integrity desk is going to be working on those to check all the files for the dealers, update everything on the system, and if maybe there's the need that they should submit other documents, they will also liaise with those offices to be able to address the issues of data integrity, and as well as to ensure that the estate firearms also they are receiving attention, because the estate firearms currently, they are there, but the control part of it is still, we rely much on the people that are finalizing the estate. But this is the office that has been established to deal with it. Now coming to the service delivery improvement initiative from our side, it has been indicated on the several issues about the 90 working days as days that we have set for ourselves that we will be able to finalize the application. And we have realized that it's a challenge for us. But we say because there's a challenge with the 90 days, there should be provisional and faster and stationed crime combating grants that has to be monitor all the applications from the second level up until the national level so that we follow up on this 90 days. Because the 90 days starts from the station up and back from the station. So if the application will be processed from the station, we'll go through all the process provincial, CFR and go back to the station, then we count 90 days. We realize that we're not able to achieve that, but we're monitoring on that one. But on the other side, we're saying we need to revise on this 90 days turnaround time because there are a lot of challenges in relation to the achievement of this thing. Also taking on the issues of whether we're not compromising quality, we're rushing on the issue of 90 days and all these other things. But there's a team that has been established by the regional commissioner to look in those issues and to report on whether it's possible to review or to take with the 90 days turnaround time. Now with the 2015 challenge is 2015 marked the second phase for renewal of firearms license valid for 5 years, and then the 2016 now is the renewal for 10 days, for 10 years. So we have seen a serious challenge in terms of the increasing number of applications we have seen on the renewals as well as on the competency as I've been presenting. But one thing that I have indicated is that this backlog, we can say it's backlog for now, but we should be able to say we are planning and we are doing this. We are planning for future because one thing that I can indicate is that a person who's applying for a license for now for purpose of self-defense, 5 years come, 5 years time, that person must renew. And the number will obviously accumulate in each and every year. So that is the challenge that the DFR is having, and to see that we actually try to address it through the overtime where fines are available, and also to actually encourage our members to work on flexi hours to be able to address the challenges of the backlog. And we also alternate the deciding officers to focus on outstanding applications, especially where we had a backlog of renewals as well as the competency. We had to take them from the people that were dealing only with the new application so that they can also assist with the competencies as well as the renewals. Insufficient capacity at section level, DFOs unable to process applications timelessly. That is the challenge that was highlighted there. We don't have enough capacity at the provincial level and state level, and it's one thing that we is receiving attention, because we find the DFO is dealing with the firearms, is also dealing with the second-hand goods, and is also dealing with liquor, and all of them are actually demanding. But we are going to be monitoring those processes through the National Management Forum. And like I've indicated, with the investment of 608 personnel that will be, the interns that will be coming, we will also be able to make a breakthrough. But it's also receiving attention on the provincial level, where they have prioritized the filling of those posts. And I know with Free State that we visited Tuesday, we had a workshop, and it's receiving attention. They are busy with the process of distributing the resources to ensure that the DFOs are actually covered in terms of the capacity. And this is the process that is going to be unfolding throughout the country, making sure that we have relevant people or enough people or sufficient capacity to be able to do the job in relation to firearms, because the number is increasing in each and every year. The other challenge that we're having is a system that is very slow during the normal working hours. And remember, we are like, if you lose one day, if the system is not working for one day, the production of one day is affected, because we are more reliant on the system. We are working on the system more than anything. Although we have more papers, but after processing, after doing everything, those papers must also be captured on the system. So our system is very slow, but this has been received the attention of technology management, and they are investigating the program with CITA. But what I can indicate is that there is a process of updating or upgrading the systems within the South African Police Service. So obviously this one of our environment will also receive the attention. Corruption within and outside the CFR. The CFR security plan that has been developed and circulated, and as I've indicated, the vetting of members targeting the vulnerable groups, and we have also launched, we will be launching a project to identify the DFOs with a conflict of interest, because the problem, the corruption is not only at CFR, corruption is actually even at the station level that we have identified. And now said, in order for us to clean up the environment, we also all have to include the station level, the provincial level, as well as the CFR. So there's a project that will be unfolding to check the interest, the conflict of interest at all levels in order to address the challenges that we are having. Captain, that is in a nutshell that I can be able to highlight, unless Karima will be want to add on the... Okay. That is in a nutshell that I can highlight in relation to the turnaround strategy. So far, this is what we have made. On the figures, they will change every day because it's all system-based. But on the issues that we're reporting on was the progress that was made until the end of the financial year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, General, for your presentation. We will now go to the Firearms Appeal Board, Mr. Mongwe. Right, then we'll move on to the Firearms Association, Mr. Comfort. We do all the presentations and then we'll go to questions. Mr. Comfort, you're welcome.
I apologize. I'm not used to this. It's a little strange to me, but I will run through the presentation, and I will, on some of the issues, most likely do it fairly quickly and then give more attention to some of the others. If I start off with the implementation, the Act, as we have it now, was implemented in 2006 with the transitional arrangements. That provided for a period from 2006 to 2009 for the relicensing period, which at that stage was experienced as total chaos. In June 2009, there was a regulation published that would render all old licenses to lapse and be cancelled. At that stage, it was estimated that it would bring about 350,000 people to be criminalized immediately if all their old licenses were cancelled. In June that year, SAANTAS brought two court applications. The main application challenged the constitutionality of some of the transitional arrangements and parts of the Act. The urgent application that we brought applied to deem all the old licenses valid until a decision was given in the main application. On the 24th of June 2009, we received a decision from the North Gauteng High Court that granted the application of SAANTAS, which then gave us a situation where all the old licenses are deemed to remain valid. The main application was never heard. There were two reasons for that. One, the SAPS, the police, never responded to the filing of the affidavit. And the interest of our members was protected because of the decision in the urgent application that kept the old licenses deemed to be valid. On the 11th of January 2010, the minister announced an amnesty period. On the 25th of January 2010, we had a request from the government attorney to start talking about possible settlements. That resulted in a situation where on the 29th of March, between agreement between SAANTAS and the police, we requested the High Court to retain the decision in the urgent application and keep valid and extend it, and to defer sine die the hearing of the main application. This would allow adequate time to see if we could find meaningful solutions to some of the problems and could perhaps solve the differences we had. There were indeed lots of meetings, and the relationship between SAANTAS and the police improved with significant improvement in the process of licensing. In June 2010, the then minister appointed a task team to investigate certain of the problems that were experienced with the implementation of the Act and the licensing process. We played a material role in requesting that to be done and also formed part of the task team. Unfortunately, the report flowing from that investigation was never published publicly. In 2011, we had an amendment act that brought limited changes, and 2011 to 2013 was a period where we saw improvement in the licensing process. If I refer to the 90 days period that General Mumateti talked about just now, in December, January 2013, the service level as we experienced it from the other side was such that within 6 weeks, over the Christmas period, an application was finalized and a license issued. So there was a material improvement in the service level. Then it was in that period, however, also, we started picking up indications of fraud and bribery, and in February 2014, I personally handed file to the then Secretary of Police with clear evidence of bribery. Whether that played a role in some of the prosecutions that may have followed or disciplinary matters that may have followed later, I don't know, and I'm also not worried about it too much. The point is, what we discovered, we made available to the police. 2014 was then a period where material fraud was discovered and a large number of staff were disciplined. It was also a period when the commander of the Central Firearms Registry was not appointed permanently. To my understanding, an acting commander was appointed on a month-by-month basis, and there was a massive deterioration in service levels. More or less in February 2015, as I understand it, Brigadier McWillie was appointed as the commander of the CFR, and in March last year you had the Firearms Forum presented here. After this, indeed, the stakeholder forums were created with a focus on the youth task teams as identified by General Mumateti. And while there were a number of meetings, I think here we have different views on whether those were successful or not. In my view, the communication and those two task teams terminated in about October 2015, which was when we had the last meeting of those task teams. And I know the views would be different. I would not argue about that. We also have the SAPS Hunters Consultative Forum. The Consultative Forum was created in 2004 with the initial publication of the Act, and the intention of that forum was to focus on solving practical problems in implementing the Act. The staff of the Central Firearms Registry and all the accredited hunters associations are members of that forum. We met regularly, normally every 4 months, three times a year, and indeed some good progress was made on solving some of the practical problems in relicensing. However, from the beginning of 2014, the commander of the Central Firearms Registry did not attend these meetings, and the last of those two meetings, nobody from the CFR attended at all. This results in a process where there is no method of communication on practical problems experienced by the hunters associations in the licensing process. The issues that I would talk to you about, the problems we experience, are not unique to SA Hunters. It's exactly the same for all of the hunters associations, and most often also for all the sport shooting associations. I managed to secure a meeting with Brigadier Mabule in July 2016 as part of that process, where there were communication between the Central Firearms Registry and some of the stakeholders. By that stage, I had accumulated a list of problems of about 149 individuals, which I've handed to him. I presented it to representatives of the Central Firearms Registry in July at the SAPS Hunters Forum meeting. I then gave it to Brigadier Mabule at a meeting I had with him, and at a later stage at one of the task group meetings, a similar copy of the same was submitted to Brigadier Mabule. Unfortunately, there was no response on those issues. I eventually managed to secure a meeting with the chairperson of this committee for the 10th of February, in between July and the end of 2015. There were numerous meetings with members of the police, either as a member of those top teams, and I even managed to eventually have an individual meeting together with John Welsh of SAGA with General Sitole on the 17th of November. At short notice, the Honourable Chairperson could not meet with us as he was recalled for some other duty, and I then met with Mr. Kinners and handed him a file describing some of the problems we've experienced. I managed to secure a meeting with Brigadier Mabule and Jerome Mamotetri on the 33rd of March this year, when I again submitted a list of problems that we experienced, and these are practical problems around the issuing of licenses. I will refer to one or two examples. Of the about 130 that I submitted to them on the 3rd of March, we got feedback on 78, and many of those problems were solved. Now, what are the nature of these problems? It's simple things like individuals that have applied for relicensing as long back as 2008, as part of that relicensing process, who never yet received the new licenses for their firearms. And we query those and ask, you know, go check what happened with those licenses. And if for whatever reason they lost, please just do a reprint. Let us have them. We will provide it to our members. Just one example of such problems. Then we attended a meeting on the 8th of March, once again arranged by the chairperson of this committee, together with a number of other role players, which was a facilitation of the process between some of the stakeholders and the police to say, here are the stakeholders, there are some problems, see if you could attend to these. I had a further meeting scheduled, and at that meeting of the 3rd of March with General Mamotetri, we in essence agreed with each other that we should meet about once a month to look at these practical problems, many of which could be solved in an easy way. We had a meeting scheduled initially for the 6th of April. It was later on referred to the 20th of April, and then on the 19th it was cancelled after we brought the court application in March. Now, what is the nature of the problems that we experience? And on some of these, I will most likely have a similar view as the members of the appeal board may have. What our members experience is that license applications are refused for what I would call inappropriate reasons. When an application is refused, a letter is sent to the individual and a detailed reason is then given as to why that application is refused. Now, some of those I've given you as examples, and in the file that I've given to Mr. Kinners, I've attached for each one of those one example to illustrate. If I say the detailed reason is just given as the application is refused, in that file there's a copy of a letter to one of our members that just says your application is refused without any detail around the reason. Some of the reasons that we have is there's a lack of motivation, there's not convinced of the need to have the firearm, you did not provide an endorsement while the endorsement is attached, you did not provide a copy of the competency certificate while the copy of the competency certificate is indeed attached with the application, or you already own sufficient firearms, and hence your application is refused. The latest one that we receive, and we currently have a number of complaints like this, is the motivation for firearm was not signed. Now, there is no requirement in the Act or the regulations that a motivation for the firearm is going to be signed as well. And these are the things that eventually just result in either a new application being brought for the same firearm or it becomes an appeal. And these are the kind of things that I believe we could sort out fairly easily. When I talk about poor service delivery, information on firearms that are sold or stolen or got rid of or in whatever way, not removed from the name of a person, I provided one example of a firearm that was sold about 4 years ago, and if you draw the information of the individual on the system of the police, that firearm is still shown as licensed to him or her. License cards not being printed or printed long after the approval, cards getting lost in between the printing and given to the individual member, license cards printed and issued with incorrect information. I have an example of 6 licenses issued to one individual without any date, without an approval date, without an expiry date. Now, those licenses were given to the individual as licenses after having been applied for, and in all practical purposes, they are either not valid or are valid forever because there is no termination date on those. Then lastly, as an association, we applied for accreditation as a professional hunters association. Our application was handed in at the local DFO on the 4th of September last year. We have not yet received any response to that application, not even recognition of receipt. What we have is a receipt that proof that we paid for the application being handed in. On the renewal of competence, in our view, there is a complete mess. There is significant inconsistency between DFOs as to when is it required and what should be done to renew your competence. In essence, the principle is fairly simple. Due to the change in the legislation, a competence certificate is valid whether it carries a termination date or not until the last license for the type of firearm lapses. Then Section 10A1 of the Act is actually very specific. It states explicitly that the renewal of such competence application should be handed in together with an application for the renewal of the relevant license. So if I have competence for a self-defense firearm, Section 13, when that last license, Section 13 license of mine lapses for a handgun, it means my competence lapses with that. And the Act states explicitly my application for the renewal of the competence must be handed in together with the application for the license. Now, in the instruction issued by Brigadier Mabuli in February, he requests those two applications to be separated, to be split. First, the application for the competence to be done, and once that's finished, the application for the renewal of the firearm license to be handed in. If it were a new application for competence and a first application for a firearm license, it would make sense to me. But if it are a renewal, the Act is specific in that the Act says it must be done together. I believe it is inappropriate and it's wrong to split them by means of a directive. In essence, I would submit, with all due respect, Brigadier Mabuli, I don't want to get involved in a fight with you, but you're changing the law by means of your directive. You cannot do that. On the matter of the renewal of licenses that lapsed, the first licenses lapsed late 2010 and then starting in 2011. Those are largely Section 13 firearm licenses, and most of them most likely handguns because they were valid for a period of 5 years. Since that period, all applications that were received for renewal were processed and new licenses were issued initially. We started picking up differences between provinces and inconsistency in the way it was done as from 2012, and in the Hunters Forum, Hunters SIPS Forum, we started talking to the police about this and saying, you've got to watch out. The Act requires an application for renewal of a license to be handed in at least 90 days before the license lapses. There are a number of late applications that have been received, and these are not treated in the same way between different provinces. We found that, for instance, in the Free State, DFOs would, on the instruction, inform people if they apply late for a license, rather to go hand in the license at the firearm at a dealer and apply for a new license for that firearm. Whereas in the Western Cape, the licenses or the applications, the late applications were accepted, but nothing happened to them if they were late. Those that were in time were accepted and were processed, while in some other provinces, whether they were in time or they were late, they were accepted and they were processed and new licenses issued. As a matter of fact, there were some instances where I, if necessary, can bring proof to you that after licenses had lapsed, some DFOs would call individuals within the ambit of their responsibility area and tell the individual, your firearm license has lapsed. Please come into the station. Let me help you complete an application for renewal, and those renewal licenses were issued. So there was a complete difference between provinces and DFOs in terms of the way in which the applications for renewal of licenses, and especially those that were late, were handled. And we spoke at length with police at different levels about the matter. The last instance where we had a discussion on this as a problem that's got to be addressed and the solution to be found for this was on the 17th of November when John Welch and I met with General Sitoe, and we had an extensive discussion on this matter. We then had the directive of February 2016 that was issued by the Acting Commissioner, which in essence states that if your license is lapsed, you should be advised by the DFO that you should surrender your firearm, and the only way in which you can surrender it would be for destruction. If you are within the 90-day period, if you have a reason why your application is late, your application would be accepted and the license would be, your application would be processed and the license may then be issued. With all due respect, once again, to the Acting Commissioner, our view is that his advice in this matter was wrong. The Act is very specific. The Act does not provide for any late application to be taken in and processed. We believe that it's a shortfall in the Act that's got to be addressed. But once again, our submission would be that the police doesn't have the right to make law by taking such a decision and issuing a directive on this matter. Brigadier Mabuli and General Mumatiti would know that our view on that is that Section 21 of the Act actually provides a completely valid alternative to that. Section 21 of the Act allows the registrar to issue a temporary possession and use permit for a firearm. The section also provides for any condition to be linked to such permit. And our submission to General Sithole already in November last year was, why don't you use this on a basis where if my license is lapsed and I want to apply for a license again, I want the license to be renewed, do it in a way where police say to me, bring me your application for the renewal of your license, I will issue you a temporary permit, then the firearm is legally in your possession. And the police would have all my information. You would have my fingerprints, you would have my address, you would have my telephone number, you would know that I've got a safe, you would know the firearm is still in my possession. You would know where to get hold of me. And it's a simple way to get out of this one where a license is lapsed. We humans, we tend to forget, especially people that do not work with us regularly. Rather than do that, it looks like we're going to end up in court on this matter. Barrel replacements. People that shoot seriously with a competition or hunting need to replace parts of firearms, and the most commonly done is the firearms of hunting rifles or the barrels of hunting rifles, either used for hunting or sport shooting, that needs to be replaced after about every 4,000 shots. This process takes up to 2 years to get a barrel replacement license, and it's actually a fairly simple process. I go to, whether it's Safari and Outdoor, or whether it's any other of the gun shops, I go buy a replacement barrel.
Give you five compliments.
Thank you, sir. I screw out one barrel and screw in another barrel. The license or the number of that barrel changes, and it's a change in circumstances or a change of the part that's going to be done. And that seems to be a continuous problem that cannot be solved. Pressure tests are still required, but the SABA don't do this anymore. Another problem is the variance between the caliber of rifle and the head stamp of a bullet. Section 90 of the Act states that I'm not allowed to have ammunition in my possession unless I am in possession of a licensed firearm that could discharge this ammunition. Now, bullets very often have as a head stamp at the back of the case that indicates the caliber of firearm. But when you're a serious hunter or sport shooter, you reload yourself, and there's a whole range of cases that could be used. We have a serious problem where if the head stamp on the bullet is different from the caliber of the firearm, we're threatened with being locked up for having illegal possession while it's actually completely legal possession of those bullets and ammunition. The delay in the processing of permits is fairly commonly known. I'm not going to address that any further. The data provided on the website of the CFR is completely outdated. I know that Brigadier Mavuli collected or requested the correct data to be provided in April. We certainly provided our data, but when I checked yesterday, it was still not the correct data that was reflected. SA Hunters happens to be the first Hunters Association that was accredited by police. We're not reflected as a Hunters Association on the website at all, while as a Sport Shooting Association, our name appears twice. If we look at the present situation, yes, we did bring an application on the North Gauteng High Court. Our finding affidavit was filed on the 16th of March 2016. Before the documents were filed and were delivered and served on the police and the state attorney, I personally attempted to call the Honourable Chairperson. I could not get hold of him, and I spoke to Mr. Kinnard and requested him please to convey the message to Mr. Beckman that we're bringing a court application. On the 3rd of March when we met, I also told General Monatetti if we decide to bring a court application, I will inform her beforehand. And I indeed gave a call on the day before the documents were filed to tell her that the court application documents will be delivered. The state attorney on behalf of the police has issued a notice that the application will be opposed. On the 3rd of May, the state attorney requested extension of time to the end of May to respond and suggested possible discussions to attempt to find common ground. We've agreed to both of those. And obviously, SA Hunters will be prepared to address the problems experienced. We will be prepared to talk to the police if we're approached. We don't want to go to court if it's not necessary. But the situation as is, we cannot continue any longer. It's just become untenable. On some of the matters, I will support and I will agree with what General Mamateti said. The SMS notification system was indeed introduced. It is, however, not very effective. There are some people that get SMSs that they have to bring in their licenses for renewal about 2 years after the license has lapsed. There are some people that do not get them. There are some people that do get them in time. On the communication strategy, while there was good intention, I believe there's no real communication with the stakeholders. The engagement forum has stopped in October last year. The 90 days turnaround time is something that, with effort, I believe could be achieved, but it will take some time. The renewal of licenses is a matter that I would suggest should be considered very carefully. The number of renewals is going to shoot up from now for the next 5 years. All the Section 16 licenses that we issued for sport shooting and dedicated hunting and all the hunting firearms licenses are issued for a period of 10 years now. To give you an indication, as an association, we've got 39,500 paid up members. 28,000 of those are dedicated hunters and or sport shooters. All of them have more than 4 firearms. The majority of those firearms would have licenses that are valid for 10 years. They will start lapsing in 2016. So from 2016 for the next 5 years, the number of renewal applications you're going to get will most likely more than double. And in the same period, you already start the second renewal of licenses for the Section 13 firearms. So you could expect something like 3 times the number of renewal applications over the next 5 years than you've had in the past 5 years. And if you want to deal with those and address those, the system would have got to be able to do that. On the insufficient capacity, I would sincerely support General Mamateti. We experience that. There are DFOs where people start queuing 2 o'clock in the morning to be able to hand in their applications for renewal of licenses, and I've had a conversation with General Mamateti about those. There's a serious shortage of people to address these and to attend to these matters. Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm not going to waste the time any longer.
Thank you, Mr. Comfort, for your respect. Mr. Mungwe, welcome back. We'll give you the opportunity to be the last presenter. You're welcome.
Thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. This will be a short and brief presentation by the Firearms Bill Board. If we could quickly go to slide number 3, where we are talking about the introduction. We took the liberty just to explain a little bit quickly what is the Firearms Appeal Board. As it's indicated there, it has been created by the statute, then the Firearm Control Act, Section 128. And the responsibility to create that rests with the minister. Thank you. And the members of the Firearms Appeal Board are as listed there. I did that because we have to understand that in terms of the Act, people must have at least practiced law for about 5 year period, but the Act allows an additional member who might be a member of the South African Police Service. Thank you. We can go to the next one. That is the organogram. I wanted to show the committee that there are members who are appointed by the minister and those who are appointed by the national commissioner. The top part indicated the chairperson as well as the members. is by the minister, but from the subsection down, they are appointed by the National Commission of the South African Police Service. Thank you. We'll come to the function of the board. Our duties are outlined in terms of section 133, read with the regulation 91 of the very same act, that precisely it's for the board to consider appeals which are lodged by members of the public, be it business or individuals. And our powers is that we can confirm the decision of the police or reverse it or change it where we feel it's appropriate to do so as empowered by the legislation. However, I wanted to also to emphasize that we are not a governing board or we don't have governance powers over the CFR or Central Firearm Registry, except as restricted by legislation to consider appeals. The other additional thing is that the minister, however, may delegate us to perform any other function in terms of our contract. And when we come to two, I can indicate the current statistics and other activities of the board. If we could go to the slide quickly. In summary or in a nutshell of this, from January up to now, the Firearms Appeal Board have received about 999 appeals for from January up to now. What I with due respect, I regret is the issue of what has been brought forward. But in my understanding or my memory is that we are having a total of about 2,000 outstanding appeals all in all that has been committed. If I have to bring the carry over from here. So I will be able to emphasize that is a very manageable number at the moment, taking into account that from a period around about 2007, we were having 22,000 appeals, and of which that bedrock has been demolished up to so far. What is down below the slide is just a summary of indicating what could the other files outstanding. It could be letters, correspondence with other attorneys or individuals. If we could go to three. The CFR and the Appeal Board administrative relationship. This wanted to make it clear what is our relationship in terms of the Act with the Central Fire Registry. They are entrusted with the duty to provide the Appeal Board with administrative support, and their functions is outlined by the Act also, that the administrative function thereof will be performed by members of the South African Police Services appointed to do so by the National Commissioner. And it's very important to also emphasize the issue of who the custodian of these files, of the application as well as files containing the appeals. All those files, the custodian thereof is still the registrar, being the National Commissioner, and being the South African Police Service as a whole. We have also included some of the systemic conduct which we have identified from the functioning of the CFR. We'll go next. These are some of what we call systematic conduct or repeating conduct which we have identified as the board from where we are sitting. It is the prevalence of refusal or fail to give refusal reasons of applications. You find that we have picked it up mostly from appeals that applicants, individual business, they do not really get the refusal reasons of the decision which has been taken, to an extent that they lodge appeals without having refusal reasons in hand, and some of them even approach the High Court in order to compel the CFR to give them refusal reasons. Because in terms of the Act, if you lodge an appeal, you must be able to attach a refusal letter or refusal reasons from the CFR, so that you must manage to outline the grounds of appeal. In the absence of that, your appeal becomes too much handicapped. We also experience a situation whereby there's a failure to give us information when we request, particularly appeals, the files themselves. Because for us to understand the background of the refusal, as the CFR must have the appeal to peruse whether the person has got criminal records or what is the background information obtained by the police or whether did they recommend the application by the CFOs or not. So in the absence of those files, it becomes difficult. Thank you. Some of the refusal reasons which we have picked up is that they are very much standardized, of which it cannot be promoted because the administrative law dictates that you have to look at each and every application individually on its own merits. So you cannot have a standardized refusal reasons parked somewhere, which will appear as a cut and paste. We have also picked up that there is the issue of the IT system in the CFR from where we're seated, that there are challenges. I think also they also indicated that. But where we are seated, how we picked it up ourselves as the board, is that an applicant would have applied for a firearm license, and the refusal reasons by the CFR will be that you are already in possession of such firearm for self-defense. But if you go deeper as the board to find out if that is the truth, you will find that that firearm has long been sold. And this applicant has informed maybe the provinces, maybe it hasn't reached the head office, and approved that the firearm has been sold, but they have not been removed from the data. So the IT is not refreshed or upgraded or looked at continuously to update new information. And that would be very important to upgrade that. We can go to the next slide. You will realize that we also try to inform the committee in terms of our view as far as the issues which causes the backlog. And we are saying that, point number one, the Act provides time frames as to when a license or particular permit expire. And those periods of expiry have got a bearing in the sense that the police management have got a period of 90 days which they've set for themselves to finalize these applications. But it appears as if due to overlaps of expiry of many processes, the 90-day period appears to be something which is a stumbling block to them. And we think they need to review that, whether it is practical possible to comply with all this in 90 days. There are also a number of things which need to be completed before an application is finalized. And the board is of the turnaround time set, as I've indicated, needs to be revisited. The board is also of the opinion that the number of the application lodged far exceeds the number of personnel in the CFR to deal with this. And hence, it takes time to finalize this. That you will see by them having a request, particularly to have intent to assist them. We are of the view that also the EFOs are not enough to handle these processes. And we are of the view that if that could also be revisited. We also have concluded that some of the refusal reasons, when we view them as the board members or as board, they tend to project that maybe the people who are considering these applications are not well competent or efficient to deal with this. This could be maybe the issue of training, and it will be very important that it be improved. We have picked it up because the refusal reason, for example, such as a person applying for a firearm license for self-defense, and the refusal reason given to an individual is that the application has been considered a refused by the National Convention Arms Control Committee. Now, you ask yourself whether is it correct that a participating firearm for self-defense was indeed really referred to that committee, and the answer is no, because those are weapons. Another example would be whereby a company applies for firearm licenses for purpose of conducting business in the security industry, and the person has applied for 5 firearms, and the refusal of these reasons will be
that you have applied for firearms which outnumber the number of personnel in your service, because at the moment you've got only 3 security officers and you have applied for 5 firearms. But if you look at legislation, there's no way where it says you must match the number of firearms in your hand as well as the number of the firearms of the security personnel. Because practically, if I establish a company for purpose of rendering service to business or government in form of tenants or private sector, the first thing they will ask you, do you have firearms to perform this function or not? So you are not going to get the job first and then come back and say, I got a job now, I want 10 firearms to guard. So I think the important thing is compliance. They have to look at whether this company comply with all requirements in order to get a firearm license in terms of serial legislation as well as the accreditation by themselves, other than comparing the number of personnel and the number of individuals. Because the Act says clearly that no company can or no individual can give a firearm to a security officer who does not have a competence certificate. Those are some of the things. If we could look at the number 5 shortcoming. we are saying that in here, despite the intention of the legislature that the Firearm Control Act was to cap proliferation of illegal firearms, that cannot be only the purpose. You realize how we've entered that paragraph. We say, despite the intention of the legislature that the FCA must curb the proliferation of firearms, there are certain sections of the Firearm Control Act that work against this purpose. Because we are of the view that even if you look at the preamble of this Act, the emphasis was that it is to curb proliferation of illegal firearms. But was that the intention of the legislature to deal with only proliferation of illegal firearms? Or the intention was to deal also with proliferation of even licensed legal firearms. So, from the all angles of the country, including this parliament, you realize that the concern is for firearms, whether they are legal or illegal. I'll give you an example. I do not think that is desirable that a person who conducts hunting, for example, the Act must allow that individual to have 20 firearms for a purpose of conducting hunting. It can't be correct, it can't be true that you use 20 firearms for that purpose. So this Act must also look at proliferation of legal firearms, not only illegal. Furthermore, let's look at other countries. If we are to defense or to grant people firearms in self-defense purpose, because those are legal weapons, what other mechanism have we undertaken to say that this Act will give us a less that this individual is not suitable to have a firearm? For example, the issue of mental health of a person, the fitness of an individual, is very important. Do we detect, do we have a certificate from psychiatrists who deal with medical mental illness to be sure that this person's mental capacity is taken proper? It's not perhaps schizophrenic or psychopathic or even anger management. Because I don't see what's wrong to say that if you want a driver's license, we must be sure that you have got good eyesight before we give you a driver's license. And we say we are giving you a gun which can kill, but we don't know about the mental stability of yourself. And the Act, in terms of weapon of self-defense, we have to also say that in this Act, it does not specifically specify what is it the CFR must look at in order to say this person qualifies to have a self-defense. It's an open-ended thing. Therefore, whether I'm dealing with kindergarten, a crutch, I can say I need a firearm for self-defense. A caster, I will say I need a self-defense. A prophet, anybody. In fact, it means every citizen in the Republic has got the right to a firearm. Unless there are extreme cases of where you are convicted with an offense which you haven't paid fine. But despite that, any person can have a weapon in this country. And we indicated the concerns also, the shortcoming of Section 14, 16,
and 17. Those are whereby we allow people to have prohibited firearms. We've got the so-called prohibited firearms. But the Act allows that a prohibited firearm can be acquired from other reasons. Prohibited firearms, what are those? We're talking about fully automatic rifles. There are people who have got a license for firearms equivalent to AK-47, and they are holding them lawfully because of the Act, because the Act provides for that. Be it for sports or whatever, it sort of says, if you cannot use a self-defense weapon, you can give other reasons why you want a fully or semi-automatic, we'll give it for you for self-defense. So we have to look at that. In terms of other settings, for hunting, the number is unlimited in terms of that. I can have 200 firearms. In terms of collection, section 20, I can also have even 2,000 guns. It's unlimited. So if the police refuse to give you a certain, and the police craft a refusal reason and say, we think they've got enough firearms for purpose of hunting, that person, when he or she approaches us, the person calls the Act and say, but the Act has got no limit. You are people, those people were wrong. Give me my gun. Because in terms of the Act, you have got no leg to stand on. So you are bound to uphold the appeal because the Act is provided so. So there are shortcomings in this Act which we really need to look at, but with the intention to disarm people who conduct businesses or who conduct hunting. That is not the intention, but let's be realistic. We give you the tools to work with, not we give you the tools to store in the storeroom. We are aware that the minister, we are part of it in terms of the view of this Act, and we are fully participating. What you are saying, we are also voicing in those forums. These are the recommendations from us, from where we are seated, despite the fact that we are not a governance body to the CFR, but we are able to pick up things and can make recommendations. In fact, in terms of our employment, we must inform the minister of all what we have picked from the conduct of the CFR quota. One of them is that we realize that the chairperson of the consideration committee and the CFR, they are lay people. But let's be honest, they are dealing with administrative laws and the administrative rights that are given to them. But we are of the view, subject to arguments and corrections, that perhaps the CFR should consider to employ legally qualified people there in their department. It could not that we say they must fill all of them with legally qualified people. But if they could have a sprinkle of these qualified people, because you are dealing with rights, you give rights to someone to acquire a firearm, you must be sure that you have interpreted administrative law correctly. The unfitness inquiries, these are where a person has conducted misconduct with firearms. And the CFR or the police has got the power to declare you unfit to have a firearm. As a board, we have realized that those inquiries which are contained and provided by law are presided by people who many times they do not understand how to conduct the inquiries in terms of following the procedure as prescribed by law, of giving other people the alteram patent rule, the right to voice or to state your case, the right to have a lawyer to represent you, the right to have an interpreter. I'll give you an example. Many times, the lawyers who appear to us win on technicality, where the presiding officer must say, you have got the right to appoint a lawyer to represent yourself. The presiding officer of the SAPS will write not applicable in that pro forma. But if you write not applicable, the lawyer comes and says, chair and the board, my client's rights were not explained. They said not applicable. Therefore, technically, the whole proceeding is irregular because this person in terms of the law should have been explained properly and the answer should be as follows. I don't want a lawyer. Or I will conduct my own proceeding. Or I ask for a lawyer postponed. Then the president will not postpone to give you a chance. But if you write not applicable, the board will uplift the unfitness. As a result, a person who is unfit will be technically made to be fit and go and kill people. So we have to invest on training these presiding officers very, very well, so that if you take a decision, it must end scrutiny of the board and the court of law.
We have spoken about personnel who sit in this, that they need to be trained in terms of administrative law. And the records, Chair, I have to emphasize, this is very serious. The records of so people like unfitness, the board hardly get them. You write until maybe 3 months or 5-6 months, you don't get the records. And the lawyers are breathing on your neck as well as other people. They say in terms of the law, you must decide within 90 days. Where is the record? You write to the provincial office, you write to the police station, you don't get. As a result, 90 days is lapsing and board must take a decision. And what will be the decision? In favor of the unfit person, who might be a criminal. We have already said that the IT system needs to be looked thoroughly by the CFR. We are also of the view that the CFR must invest in becoming a paperless institution. That will assist to curb the loss of files. It could also curb the issue of perceived corruption, or even catch the corrupt individual. Because we are of the view that there are so many papers in the CFR. Hence, you have heard that they are looking for containers. Many containers, because the space is full. And then application keeps on coming. So I think we must move with time and see how innovative are we that the CFR must limit this issue of files and papers getting lost and taken to court because you don't have files lost. It's nowhere to be found. We are saying for the issue of the backlog, we are happy we have seen that they said that we are saying they must get additional people to look at, but we have seen they are talking about overtime as well as intense. But we are saying those are short-term things. Intense, it's a short-term thing. You must project and look at the long over, I mean, not short-term, but long-term solutions, which will mean you have to assess and see where do you need to employ more people. I'll tell you, for example, it's so difficult to get a file from the CFR, but my question is, how do they have filing clerks? Because those are positions which you can create also. For people to deal with voluminous of this, because once the files are not stored alphabetically or numerically, where are you going to get files of Mr. Mombe in a container which is full of files? Then you will fail to bring the file to the board as requested, and the board will take a wrong decision. We are saying they must also lastly look at the issue of the turnaround time in finalizing this, because we are saying that the volumes of their work is too much compared to the issue of their personnel. That is another thing we have already said, that their work is too much compared to the personnel which they have, and the more personnel would assist them. And lastly, I think it's that we must look at the issue of revisiting the Crime Control Act. We review it and we play all meaningful roles in order to make sure that it's amended appropriately, that it must not keep on coming in and out, because there's been many times in the oven, get cooked, taken out, returned, right? So if we could look at it honestly and holistically and expedite this, so that we all must be proud that firearms are in the hands of people who deserve, and the number of firearms in their hands is not just proliferation, but for a good cause. Thank you.
Mongwe, colleagues, we will go to tea for 10 minutes and then we come back for questions. Thank you.
I don't know. Okay. Well.